You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Because next up is General Motors. Yes, one of the largest, if not the largest, car company on the planet. Now, GM disclosed that they were the victim of a credential stuffing attack last month that allowed some of their customers' information, some of their customers' information and allowed attackers to redeem reward points for gift cards. Now, General Motors operates an online platform to help owners of its Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, and Cadillac brands to manage their bills, their services, redeem reward points, I'm assuming for using things like a GM-branded credit card. Now, GM disclosed that it detected the malicious login activity between April 11th through April 29th of this year and confirmed that attackers did indeed redeem some customer reward points for gift cards in some of those cases. So if you have a GM account because you've got a Chevy, a Buick, a GMC, or a Caddy, you definitely gonna want to go and make sure that you are okay. And if you're reusing passwords, there you go. You might have a problem. Moving on, let's talk about airline company SpiceJet out of India. This is interesting and a little shocking. They were forced to cancel and delay flights due to a ransomware attack that left some customers stranded at airports and even inside airplanes. Now, SpiceJet said The incident tried to encrypt the company's IT systems. Quote, certain SpiceJet systems faced an attempted ransomware attack last night that has impacted our flight operations, end quote. While the company tweeted, and I quote, while our IT team has to a large extent contained and rectified the situation, this has had a cascading effect on our flights, leading to delays. Now, customers have taken to social media, obviously, to complain. And in some cases, passengers have encountered flight cancellations or delays at their airports that have lasted several hours. And can you imagine being on an airplane and being like, yeah, we can't leave the gate or we can't get to the gate because everything's ransomed and we can't let you off the plane? That is nuts. I've had planes go back to gates for various things, especially in the age of, you know, all the anti-masking, you know, I'm going to fight a flight attendant kind of thing. But that is nuts. I've never had one due to a ransomware attack, and hopefully nobody ever will again. And finally, and we have a few different finalies for you, I want to talk about the country of Greenland. Now, if you recall on my last radio show, I talked about the country of Costa Rica basically being hit and locked down due to the Conti ransomware gang, who has been holding that government hostage with its new leader. Now, the country of Greenland, which I know is owned, I believe it's by Denmark, but I believe it's still its own sovereign country with its own government. We're going to talk about them because for the past couple of weeks, Greenland's health service has reportedly been struggling to recover from a cyber attack that has crippled its IT systems, causing long waiting times and forcing doctors to resort to using pen and paper instead of computers. Although it's not currently believed that any data has been stolen by the attackers, the attack on Greenland's health service has caused large amounts of disruption since May 9th of 2022. Now, one of the first signs of the attack came when the doctor.gl website was found to be offline, which was initially described as a quote-unquote system crash. Now, patients are being told to expect longer waiting times than usual and that some appointments may have to be canceled or rescheduled. In addition, Greenland's government, the Naalakkersuisut, and I know I'm butchering that. If you are listening to me in Greenland, and I might have one or two listeners there, I deeply apologize for butchering your beautiful language, but I cannot pronounce that. Their government, we're just going to call it Greenland's government, is advertising those seeking assistance that they should contact the health service via telephone rather than email. Now, according to local media reports in Greenland, the hacking group suspected of attacking Greenland's health services are thought to be the same cyber criminals who breached the systems belonging to the country's government back in March. That attack forced the Inatsisartut, the government's parliament, and again, I apologize for butchering your language, but basically the government's parliament had to suspend its meetings for a period of time as they were recovering from this cyber attack. Now, coincidentally, the attack on Greenland's health service came almost precisely 5 years after the WannaCry ransomware gang struck United Kingdom's health services as well. And that obviously is a huge thing. If you recall, WannaCry knocked out basically 80% of the UK's NHS, their health service, causing massive disruptions and headlines around the world. So do not share personal health details on social media platforms or their messenger services, obviously, because that is a huge, huge thing, you know, that coincides with these kinds of things. But that is a big problem. So make sure if you are in Greenland that you are checking in, as your government is literally recovering from a massive cyber attack. And another finally we have is Mark Zuckerberg, founder and CEO of Facebook, now calling themselves Meta, somebody I have talked about extensively on this show, as I am not a fan. Now, here's what's going on, and this is via ABC News. Washington, D.C.'s Attorney General Carl Racine has sued Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg for allegedly failing to protect consumer data following the Cambridge Analytica data leak. That's right. We are not done with Cambridge Analytica from years ago. And to quote the complaint from Attorney General Carl Racine, the evidence shows Mr. Zuckerberg was personally involved in Facebook's failure to protect the privacy and data of its users, leading directly to the Cambridge Analytica incident. This unprecedented security breach exposed tens of millions of Americans' personal information, and Mr. Zuckerberg's policies enabled a multi-year effort to mislead users about the extent of Facebook's wrongful conduct. This lawsuit is not only warranted, but necessary, and sends a message to that corporate leaders, including CEOs, will be held accountable for their actions. Now, on top of this, the lawsuit alleges that Zuckerberg was, quote, responsible for, end quote, had the clear ability, end quote, to control Facebook operations and enabled Cambridge Analytica to use consumer data. The lawsuit alleges that third-party firms like Cambridge Analytica got data from 87 million Americans and half of the District of Columbia's residents. Mr. Racine filed a lawsuit against Facebook in December of 2018 for this leaked data and is bringing this suit following evidence found during the litigation, according to the Attorney General. In March, a judge ruled against the effort by Racine to add Zuckerberg as a defendant to that ongoing 2018 case. Facebook has basically faced previous government scrutiny over that data leak, basically from Cambridge Analytica. In 2019, the Federal Trade Commission fined Facebook $5 billion over that incident and required the company to abide by new restrictions aimed at instituting greater accountability in decisions that affect user privacy. Now, that was an absolute mess. And the reason why I say that is Zuckerberg himself went in front of Congress, and it was a complete blank show. It really, really was. I'm not kidding. To the point where, if you recall, they asked him such poor questions that Mark Zuckerberg's personal wealth grew by $4 billion as he was sitting in front of Congress trying to basically face the music for one of the worst data breaches of our personal information in years. And he made money. That's how bad our Congress treated that situation. Now, the Cambridge Analytica leak, which several news outlets obviously reported on in 2018, if you recall, concerned the London-based firm gaining access to user data in 2015 and using it to aid the presidential campaign of Donald Trump, as well as the senatorial campaign of Ted Cruz. If you recall, Cambridge Analytica was gathering this information and then creating psychographic profiles, basically, you know, running us through a psychology analytics AI to see what our susceptibility would be to the information coming from Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, and anybody else that was hiring Cambridge Analytica. Steve Bannon, a close Trump associate at the time, I don't know if they still are, obviously was a very heavy investor in Cambridge Analytica and brought them to the table here. Now, Meta, Facebook's parent company, declined to comment to ABC News on their reporting that I'm talking about here, and Cambridge Analytica filed for bankruptcy and began insolvency proceedings in the U.S. not long after the scandal broke, because why not? Who on earth would want to work with them? I'm sure they're not the last, but they were one of the biggest ones, and there you go. So Mark Zuckerberg getting his feet held to the fire. It's about time. We'll see where that goes. But those were your breaches of the week. Absolutely crazy week. Hopefully you weren't affected, but just given all the heavy hitters this week, let's just say you were. Oh, and real quick, don't forget to follow me on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, basically your favorite social media platform. I'm either at Nick AESP or / Nick Espinoza at any one of those. Come, feel free to follow me. It's always a good time. I do daily content on tech, on privacy, on cybersecurity. You'll be informed. I think it'll be interesting. So stick around and make sure to follow me.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the Deep Dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a Deep Dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive is entitled "Technology is the Only Solution to U.S. Gun Violence." And I actually wanted to start this week off a little differently than my normal ones. We're going to be talking about gun control and how technology can help solve this issue. I'm basing much of this deep dive on basically a soon-to-be-published article that I've written for Smirconish.com. It's going through editing. But before we dive into that issue, out of curiosity, on Sunday, May 29th, in the afternoon, I decided to Google mass shooting to see what news I could find for a 24-hour period. So from the afternoon of Saturday, May 28th, through the afternoon of Sunday, May 29th, these are the mass shootings I could find. Now, for the record, I am defining a mass shooting as a single gunman that shoots at least two people, or at least two people are directly affected by the shooting, whether they are killed, wounded, or otherwise injured. This means that I excluded an absolute ton of single victim instances that I found where there was one shooter only shooting one person. Think robbery or crime of passion. By that criteria, here are the mass shootings that I found that affected at least two people. There was a shooting, again, this is from the afternoon of Saturday, May 28th, through the afternoon of Sunday, May 29th, a Google search of 24 hours. These are the mass shootings with that criteria I could find. There was a shooting in Waterloo, Iowa. One person killed, one person hospitalized. A shooting in Dayton, Ohio, that is still developing. Multiple victims, apparently. Two shot, one killed in Kansas City, Missouri. One shot, one wounded in a shooting in Columbus, Ohio. There was a shooting at a McDonald's in Memphis, Tennessee, where one was killed, another was wounded. There was a shooting in downtown Fargo, North Dakota. Two were wounded. Several were injured after a shooting in Barnwell, South Carolina. Way more than two, but did not get a full number as I was doing research. Two people were shot at a swap meet in North Hollywood, California. Again, all single gunmen. Six people shot or injured in a shooting in West Phoenix, Arizona, at a house party. One man and two teens were shot in the Logan area of Philadelphia due to a drive-by shooting. One killed, two teens wounded at a shooting at a graduation party in Thomaston, Georgia. That's in Middle Georgia. Mass shooting in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Three were wounded. Two teens were killed in a shooting in North Wichita, Kansas. One was shot and the other was run over while attempting to flee the gunman. Now, in Fresno, California, one adult male was killed and three teens were wounded in a shooting. Again, Fresno, California. Four shot, including one teen, near an elementary school in Chicago's Lawndale area. Six teens were shot in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Basically, that's absolutely nuts. Another mass shooting in at an Oklahoma festival. So far as I know, one dead, seven wounded. And for the record, all of that is 17 shootings that I could find in a Google search for the last 24 hours when I searched mass shooting. That is insane. There were 17 in a 24-hour period. Now, on top of that, there were other events that were gun-related but didn't actually involve a shooting, and obviously that is of deep concern as well. So, for example, a 10-year-old was arrested in the state of Florida for threatening a mass shooting against his school. On top of that, at least 10 people were injured due to a stampede at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York, due to a rumor that an active shooter was actually in the stadium. Apparently, there was a boxing match that evening two nights ago, as I'm sitting here talking to you on Monday, May 30th, Memorial Day. There was a boxing match, and obviously the stadium was full. Celebrities like Madonna and tennis star Naomi Osaka were in the crowd, all these kinds of things. Just on the rumor, an active shooter was there. And that obviously doesn't, that obviously doesn't include, like, the shooting in Uvalde, Texas, that is just unbelievable. Another Sandy Hook, not to mention Buffalo, New York, and on and on and on. And so by virtue of that, and in the wake of, the Uvalde shooting of just, I mean, my God, children, I basically penned an article that is tentatively titled, title may change, but it was titled originally, Technology is the Only Solution to Gun Violence. And with that, I want to dive into this because I think this is just so beyond important where we are trying to balance essentially, our ability to survive, meaning we don't want to see mass shootings, with the rights that we have as citizens. And so with that, quite frankly, my fellow Americans, we are on our own. If the literal hundreds of mass shootings that we have experienced since the start of this era, since Columbine in 1999 has taught us anything, it's that the federal government is paralyzed and simply will not act on this situation. If they didn't act in 1999 or in 2012, when a monster killed 20 children ages 6 to 7, then there is zero reason to think that the execution of 19 children ages 10 and under in this past week or so is going to move the political needle at all. Whatever the reasons for this paralysis at the top level of the U.S. government, it's clear that when the next mass shooting happens, we're all going to be in the same boat. Now, I am politically agnostic. I like to say cybersecurity is agnostic to politics, even though we're not immune from it. And I want to make that absolutely clear. I don't care if you're for or against the Second Amendment. This is something that needs to be discussed. This is something that is beyond important. And yes, there have been plenty of items that at least deserve debate in terms of helping to curb this epidemic of angry and heavily armed assailants that plague our society. Things like gun control, mental background checks, restrictions, and more have been brought up, rallied for, and then have gone nowhere. The United States has a long history of firearm ownership, and that honestly, quite frankly, is not going to change. This is the reality of the situation, plain and simple. And since we are basically on our own at the local through state level, and firearms aren't going anywhere, and action items to curb the violence aren't being put into place, then it's simply up to us. And this is where technology comes into play, and technology can help these absolutely horrific situations. So let's examine how we can combat this when, quite frankly, our federal government won't. And so with that, we need to talk first about artificial intelligence, because it can be leveraged in this situation in a multitude of ways. Artificial intelligence, or AI, is all around us. Social media platforms use it to determine how best to advertise to you. Facial recognition systems use it to interpret your face when you're in front of it. AI has many applications, and firearm safety is one of the urgent items that needs addressing. Now, currently, there is a company out there called Evolve Technology that is leveraging machine learning, artificial intelligence, and camera systems to determine if a person is carrying a firearm. This technology is already available and has been used, or rather put to use, by a multitude of venues, including various NFL teams, the Lincoln Center, and even a large school district in Charlotte, North Carolina. AI-based recognition technologies are not without their issues, which includes concerns of racial and gender bias in programming, privacy concerns, and more. It is also possible that a person not carrying a weapon could be flagged by systems like this. However, the debate is basically on, is it better to briefly inconvenience a few possible, malicious people versus letting an actual shooter into the building. And I think that's one that needs to be had. So, for example, if I'm walking through a building and the AI flags me as, Nick potentially has a gun and I'm detained, let's say, to be searched, quite frankly, I would be okay with that to an extent, because basically I would not want an actual shooter to be a false positive or a false negative. That's a huge, huge problem. Now, imagine a shooter being accurately identified as armed and heading into, let's say, a school from a parking lot by a system like Evolve. If that system was attached to things like smart locks throughout the building, the school could instantly lock itself down and alert authorities of a possible attack. Now, while this wouldn't help any of the victims outside of the building, let's say in the parking lot or on playgrounds, the building would be secure, thus mitigating the possible loss of life. Now, aside from this, artificial intelligence could be trained by the social media platforms to quickly recognize and flag suspected shooters as well. So, for example, the Christchurch, New Zealand shooter live streamed his horrific rampage on Facebook. The more recent shooter in Buffalo, New York, live streamed his killing spree on Twitch, and millions have now seen this video, including myself. We basically track these kinds of things, and it was absolutely horrific. And one of those things, and I'm not making light of this situation at all, that I think makes this worse, is that as I was watching watching this individual, you know, shoot up a Topps supermarket. He has a GoPro on his head. It looks like a video game. And so if you're an impressionable young person watching this video, and millions have, you know, and you have similar alignment with this individual in terms of your beliefs or your politics or whatever it is, this is not helping the situation. You know, obviously the latest monster that we have to talk about, you know, from Uvalde, Texas, posted on Facebook that he was going to attack a school shortly before walking into a school and massacring children and teachers. Social media platforms have hundreds of millions, if not billions, you know, Facebook of users. So the only way possible to identify and catch these shooters before they potentially act is with the use of artificial intelligence. Already, the mental health field is applying AI to help improve its offerings for its care of its patients. So there's no reason why the Facebooks of the world couldn't start applying these techniques to their algorithms in attempt to identify shooters or potential shooters before they strike. Now, privacy issues are already rampant on social media. If you are a regular listener to this radio show, you know I talk about that at length. So these privacy issues are already rampant on social media, as a general population has already been psychoanalyzed by third parties that have access to your Facebook posts and data. Think Cambridge Analytica psychoanalyzing you to see if you would vote for Donald Trump or Ted Cruz or any one of those, which is who had hired Cambridge. So Facebook and other platforms are businesses, not government entities, so they can technically get away with this kind of analysis on their platforms, providing they are fully transparent about it in their terms and services, just as users can choose not to use the Facebooks of the world. More fringe websites and smaller social media platforms that attract extremists will still continue to be an issue, though these types of terrorists basically want the largest audience possible to witness their point, so they tend to put all of their stuff out on social media. So that is the first level of technology that we could be using. Artificial intelligence that could potentially see an armed intruder, you know, or potentially armed intruder walk into the building and have the building automatically locked down. That would obviously prevent a lot of casualties, or at least prepare people inside much better than somebody rampaging through the hall shooting anything that moves. Now, on top of that, we can, like I said, we can leverage AI to start seeing if those people are saying, I'm going to shoot up a school on Facebook or, you know, or any one of these, or spouting these kinds of things. These are things that can be flagged and possibly alerted to local authorities to say, hey, this person hasn't acted, but maybe this person could use some benefit of some mental health. We need to fund that better as well. And everybody agrees, including the NRA, that we've got a mental health issue here. We just need to fund it. We need to focus on that. We need to come in the middle there. But on top of that, there are other technologies that we can be leveraging. So firearm safety technology could also be a key to better security. One of the biggest issues with firearms in the United States is theft. The mass shooter in Sacramento, basically on April, used a stolen firearm that he converted from a semi-automatic to a fully automatic, which then enabled him to rapidly fire at least 100 rounds, killing 6 people and injuring an additional 12. Imagine if that stolen firearm couldn't fire for anybody else except the registered owner. Now, at the moment, biometric gun locks exist. A firearm owner can basically put their gun under lock and key, but what happens when firearms are left unlocked? Sandy Hook answered that question as the shooter, after killing his own mother, was able to steal her more powerful weapons and then use them in the worst way imaginable. Locks are great, but what about integrating the lock directly into the weapon so they cannot be separated? The technology for this has existed for about 2 decades, but these quote-unquote smart guns have not been widely adopted yet. Now, typically, smart guns have been pioneers, basically using 2 different systems. First is the fingerprinting the trigger. So, in other words, in that scenario, the weapon cannot be fired until it reads the fingerprint and unlocks, which takes about half a second or so. The second way is through radio frequency identification, meaning the weapon can be paired to an RFID sensor, such as a smartwatch, so the gun can only be fired if it's within inches of the sensor, so 10 inches. So you're holding the weapon. If it's taken away from you, obviously if it's more than 10 feet away or 10 inches away, the gun cannot fire. Now, while hacking fingerprints and RFID sensors is definitely possible, the general population does not have these skills, and therefore a stolen firearm with these types of technologies could not be used by anybody except the owner. Now, obviously, this would not have stopped the Uvalde shooter who purchased his own AR-15 rifles at age 18, but this would drastically cut back gun violence overall and perhaps even prevent another mass shooting. That is what we are talking about here. Now, I understand emotions run high over this particular topic. No rational person on either side of this debate wants to see more mass shootings. Now, while it would seem like a good idea to balance our Second Amendment rights with an attempt to mitigate mass shootings, it just doesn't seem like we're going to come, that's going to come to fruition. Having a federal law state that all new firearm purchases must have a smart gun capability or smart gun lock, as well as requiring all firearms to be retrofitted in this manner, seems like common ground in that it doesn't infringe on rights, but it also cuts down on illegal firearm use. And we simply cannot expect that a law will ever pass, assuming it's proposed to begin with. We are really on our own in this situation, and that is important. But I think that as I'm looking at this type of technology, we are not infringing on Second Amendment rights if we are just requiring that all guns have smart gun capability. If you are a law-abiding citizen, hopefully non-crazy, you can buy a firearm. It is locked to you. And so if somebody crazy in your life attempts to steal it, it is useless without your fingerprint. I mean, these are things I think that are just common sense technology that essentially skirt the debate of having an open firearm society. And so we can put a grace period to have, let's say, other firearms retrofitted, with this type of technology, but this will help. And if Congress isn't going to move on this, we're not going to have some kind of ban, or we're not going to, let's say, come in the middle and say everybody at least needs some kind of mental health screening, then we really are on our own. But these are technologies that we can leverage. And also the problem that we have is with artificial intelligence, as we are looking, let's say, at applying that kind of technology into those cameras, into those buildings to protect our schools, those have to be everywhere.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff. And I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.